Hello everyone, this is Tom Uren and I'm here with the Gruck for our weekly Between Two Nerds discussion. G'day Gruck, how are you?
I'm all good, Tom. How are you?
I'm good. This week's edition of Between Two Nerds is brought to you by Grey Noise. Grey Noise has thousands of sensors across the internet and they turn what would otherwise be noise into usable intelligence that you can do something with. So this week, Gruck, there was a, I'm going to use the word sensational, supply chain attack, an open source data compression project was subverted by, it seems like, a group of personas who over a couple of years took control of that project by convincing the legitimate project owner, a person called Lasse Collin. And then they basically pushed out a pretty clever backdoor, not a perfect backdoor. And the way it would have worked was it was going to backdoor SSH servers, essentially. And it was SSH relies on the Linux systemd, which runs at startup to start up all different services. And systemd relies on this compression library.
Right.
So it was a multi-step backdoor and people have gone wild over it. And of course, you fell down the rabbit hole.
I might have got a little bit counterintelligence on that thing.
Well, it's a wonderful example of a combination of human operations enabling a cyber type operation. So it's
absolutely
exactly in...
It was basically crack.
Yeah, that's right. So what have you learned?
Yeah, so I did. I went a little bit nuts. I read the last 3 years of XZ Devel mailing list.
Yep.
So XZ was the program. The XZ Devel was their sort of developer discussion mailing list for the maintainers and stuff. I've read back to about the start of 2021. So I may have built dossiers on each of the people that have interacted.
So I guess the project has been going since the mid-2000s, I think. And the
right. Yeah.
Maintainer, Colin, which I think is the person's last name, has
yes.
been maintaining it for over 15 years, perhaps?
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it's a solo project entirely, but...
It is, as far as I can tell, at least in recent history. I don't know the origins. So I've read several years of their archive history to sort of piece together the human side, like this human operation that they've done. And it's absolutely fascinating the way that it's gone through.
Now, first of all, you say they, and...
Yes, I'm sure it's a group.
And you think, is it a state-backed group?
I would say I'm 60% sure it's SVR, and it's the same team that did SolarWinds. I mean, that's speculation, but that's...
Right.
Like, timelines lines up, because they got burned and they were kicked out, and then they had a year to prepare and start another thing.
Right. So the features that make it seem like it's state-backed is the duration. So it's a couple of years. It's got multiple personas who... have, it seems like, at first glance, decent OPSEC in that they're fresh email addresses, fresh accounts, whatever.
Right. And their language is distinct. Like, it's not a, hello, I am the second Grug who... yeah.
Yep.
Their language is distinct. There's not
okay,
a...
Okay, so the sort of assumption is that we're dealing with a state group. And so how did they go about this?
So here's what's sort of interesting. Is they spend a lot of time trying to approach this guy and they get nowhere, right? And the way I'm looking at it is that he's burned out. He doesn't really have it to keep doing all of these big things for the project anymore.
Right, right. Like after that long, a project's kind of, it sort of feels finished in some way, but there's still more work to do. That sounds like kind of painful.
Yeah, and the work that comes in is not like, we have like great new exciting features and a 20% speed up boost that we want to add. It's like, we've changed the file format to support something that you will never use. Please add this.
And is this all happening on GitHub?
Yes, but a lot of the GitHub stuff has been lost, unfortunately. So there's the Devel, the XZ Devel mailing list.
Yep.
And then there were the pull requests. And by sheer chance, the Wayback Machine has archived the pull requests for this archive. So it archived them in November, which is right. just after GN10 was accepted as the maintainer. The month after he got full access and started doing his own releases is the only month that the pull requests for this project are archived. Never
right, right.
again.
So Jiatan, I think, is the...
Jiatan, yeah, or Tan.
Is the persona that eventually was given...
Took over.
Yeah, given maintainer permission or whatever and pushed out the back door.
Yeah.
So anyway, go on.
In September of 21, Jiatan sends in a patch to add support for editor config, which is a pointless thing to add to a project. It's a no-op. It's not going to impact anything.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets no response. So he sends in another patch a few weeks later where he's like, look, I've changed the test suite to use Seabed, like this new test suite. No response. In late October, he gets a reply on the editor config thing saying essentially, that's nice. And he responds, he's like, hey, you know, I'm here to help. You know, what can I do? Blah, blah, blah. Nothing. All right. Then someone else had sent in a patch for like multi-threaded support for something. And it sort of, it hadn't been integrated, it had gone nowhere. And so he sends in this follow-up request where he's like, hey, I've been a good boy this year. Is there any chance at all that Santa is going to bring me multi-threaded support by Christmas or like by New Year's?
Right, right, right. Those are the words they use, that I've been a good boy?
So here's the thing. This is the legit user who's like, I've been a good boy. Is there any chance that Santa will bring me multi-threaded support by the end of the year? Collins replies, Santa would love to do it, but...
but it's maintainer, not so much.
So you think that was
a legitimate request?
That's legitimate because that guy has been interacting for a long time.
Right.
And so the next thing that happens is GA10 is like, hey, helpful elf here.
Right, right. Yeah.
I've tested your patch, you know, I've done the stuff. Is that cool?
Yeah, as you were speaking, I was putting on my intelligence agency hat and I thought, that sounds like opportunity. He's responded and yes. he wants to do that, but he can't.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't know what you want to actually do. I don't know what's holding you up. I'm here and I've done a thing. How's it? Right. So he tests the patch that this guy had sent in. He's like, here's the specs. Here's the blah, blah, blah. Here's the speed up. Here's like some graphs. And he starts out with helpful elf. Which
yeah, so that's why I wondered if it was legitimate, because that is a kind of humorous way of getting...
Yes, but so this is the thing, is these guys are good, right? And so I think it was legitimate because, as I said, the original guy has been interacting with them for years. He's not a core maintainer, but he's pretty close.
Long term, but not core, perhaps.
Yes, yeah. He's sort of like, he's one of the people that has always been contributing something, and he's helpful and on the list and stuff like that. So he's like he's a real guy. He's not just a persona. Mm-hmm. He's got traces elsewhere.
You're right.
From what I could see, but Tan gets no response from Collins. Right. So it's looking a little bit dire. Then at the very beginning of February, there is this tiny one-line patch that gets accepted into the Git, and it's from Tan, and there's no discussion of it on the list.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that might have been a pull request, but we don't know because it's before the archive that we have. So right. I don't know where the conversation was for that. But this is the first time he gets a commit in, and it's a one-line thing, right? Like, it's a tiny thing, which is what Collins had done before as well in September for someone else. Someone else sent it on like, hey, you don't have an error check for a thing on OpenBSD. Here it is.
Right.
Boom, that's in, right? That takes no effort. He can look at it. He can see, like, here's a one-line change. Done, right? You send him 200 lines of patching. That's not going to happen. You send him a one-line patch, you know, he's happy to do it. So I think that they looked at what had worked and they'd now tried a different tack. But again, they get no traction. There's no follow-up. There's no interaction after that. They send in yet again another patch during this period where they get nothing, like no response at all. Then the pivotal thing happens on February 22nd of 22, which is in September of the previous year. prior to their interactions, Huawei had sent in a patch for adding some ARM 64 support, right? That historically had not existed. Collins replied to this saying, "That's great. You know, it didn't exist before because it wasn't supported when I wrote the thing. Blah 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 blah. In order for me to accept this patch, it would need updated documentation. These things would need to be changed. This hasn't been, you know, tested and verified. This is not our usual format. These variable names are not our usual thing." Just loads of just little niggling, annoying things that need to be done to make it fit in with the rest of the project. And so, like, it's going nowhere. So February 22nd is when Tan shows up and he's like, "Hi, guys, I wasn't on the list before, so I missed this." I mean, this is a month before. This is a month before he ever does anything, right?
Right.
So even if he was on the list, he wouldn't have seen it. Like, it predates his involvement of any sort. But he said, "Hi, you know, I wasn't on the list before, didn't see it. Anyway, I've gone ahead and I've updated the documentation. I've changed the variable names. I've done, right?" You know, so he's done all of this work that Collins had sort of said needed to be done before it could be accepted.
Right. Yep.
And to me, this is pivotal because this is when they go from giving him more work to do, which is not getting them anywhere, to actually doing work that needs to be done.
Yep.
Taking it off of his plate, not putting it on.
Yep.
And I think that's the pivotal thing, because from there, within 9 months, they are signing their own releases, essentially. Right? Like, they go from that sort of, "Here, I'm helping out," to suddenly it's like, "Okay, we have been talking about this, and Tan and I think that..."
Yeah, so that seems like a very deliberate plan, right? So there were other personas who were also just not necessarily making work, but casting aspersions, I guess, about, you know, what's happening with this project.
Well, even this is very, very clever, right? What they did is they have these two other guys. One is called Dennis Enns, so we'll call him Dennis. And then there's Jigar Kumar. So the funny thing is Jigar Kumar has a Russian accent. He writes with Russian idioms. Right. He doesn't use articles. Like, I was looking at it, I'm like, this is not how an Indian person writes. Like, this makes no sense. And then as soon as someone was like, "Maybe it's SVR," and I reread it, I was like, "Oh my God." Like, how did this get through quality control? So anyway, what happens is other people submit patches and Kumar shows up and he's like, "This is never going to be accepted. It takes forever. Collins, accept that you are like destroying this project."
Right.
And Tan is like, "Hey man, you know, like, easy. If you want to contribute, you know, like, you're welcome to send in your own patches, dude."
Right.
You know, like, you don't have to be like such an asshole about it. And then Kumar's like, "Don't be fucking defending him. You know, like, this is a terrible project." And then this hilarious thing happens where at the same time, on the same day, for 2 months, he sends these, like, "Checking in, has anything happened? Didn't think so." Right? So you can see that it's... Yeah. So it's monthly. He's hitting up on this stuff. And then while he's doing this, right, Dennis shows up. And Dennis is the peacemaker. Right, so you've got Tan, who's like, he's not getting involved except to say, "Hey man, don't be attacking my friend." Right? Kumar, who's applying this sort of pressure, and Dennis is like, "Guys, you know, I'm just saying, maybe he has a point. Maybe you do need a co-maintainer to sort of help out."
Right.
"And we can get a little bit more free flowing." I'm just saying, you know, I'm not, could go either way, you know, I'm just putting that out there, not trying to blah blah blah. Right. So he's the sort of peacemaker offering here's a way forward that can sort of solve your problem of, you know, people harassing you. And if only you knew someone who had submitted patches and did all the scut work and was friendly with you. And
I guess the insidious thing about all of this is that Tan by himself or herself, by themselves, just behaving in a normal for open source, could be a useful contributor, and over time they would achieve exactly the same thing. They probably would have ended up as co-maintainer if you do a good enough job, right?
Yeah, and they absolutely were. This was just a speed boost to exploit this one vulnerability that they found when they found out that this guy was sort of burned out and was not pushing things out super quickly, that was what they went for. It could have been anything else, right? If he was pushing them out super regularly, if there was a single bug report that came in, it probably would have been like, hey, man, you're going too fast. You don't have enough people doing QA. You know, you need to have a co-maintainer to maintain quality at this speed, right? It doesn't matter what it was. They would have found an angle.
That's right. And it's when you've got those kind of resources, you can always appear to be a genuinely useful open source contributor.
Yes. I mean, you have a whole bunch of very smart paid developers on staff, not one guy on the weekend.
And so to be invulnerable to this, you really need to be... why would you say no to someone useful offering to help your project, right? There is no defense in that sense.
Yep, absolutely.
Right. And so, you know, this time they can say, well, we got burnt because we had all these extra personas. Let's just be helpful next time and take longer.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you say next time.
Well.
But.
Well, yeah. I mean, looking at all this, you would think you wouldn't put all your eggs in one basket, right?
Right.
Like XZutils is not the perfect only target that exists in all of open source.
right, exactly. I mean, here's the other thing is like looking at the dates and times of these interactions, if you assume that there is an agency behind it, they don't have a guy working full-time who shows up the 22nd to send an email and then he takes the rest of the month off until March.
That's right.
Come back in 2 weeks to send your follow-up email. Enjoy your paycheck. Like, they are doing something else, right? Like, they have projects that they have to work on, and this is one of those projects. It's in a suite of things that they're dealing with. It's part of their portfolio. They might enjoy it, they might not, but it's just one of their things.
Yep, send trolling email, put a calendar reminder in for next month.
Yeah, exactly. They've got the weekly meetings. You know, how's the XZ project going? Tan, what's the progress that you've been making? Okay, that's good. Kumar, do you have a draft of that email you're going to be sending next week?
Well, I mean, even if they're different people behind the mask, I guess it could just be one person.
I mean, it could be. I think it's different people because they do come across very differently in their writing. And I think that the Tan persona had to spend quite a lot of time because they talked off list.
Right.
Like the list is how they approached and they sort of started gaining access. And then from there, they probably went to, hey, you know, do you have an instant messenger that we could talk? And then it was like, look, what's a good time for you on Wednesdays, Thursdays, or Fridays? You know, and then they can put it in and be like, okay, well, I'll chat with you at every whatever, you know. And
yeah, what I would describe that as is probably a team of people running different personas rather than one persona per person or whatever.
Right. So I think Tan would have been one person to maintain a coherent voice and continuity. It could have been done with a dossier of what's been said and whatever, but my gut feel is that they would have had just one person working that persona, like that one operative would have been doing it. The other people were less important. It could have been, who's going to be Dennis for this project? For this part of the operation, we need someone to do the Dennis person. Because Dennis is actually the persona that they use to get the initial hook into XZ. He's the one who submits the patch that adds the iFunk support, which is how they hooked into and captured execution. That was the start of their backdoor. He submits that patch, and that pull request is preserved.
Right.
Right, and I love the interaction that these guys have. So Dennis is like, I've added this patch. It's a good thing for this reason. And it's not really a good thing. Like, it's adding complexity for no reason, basically. And so Collins is like, I don't know about that. Like, I kind of like what we have now, where it's, like, pretty straightforward and easy. And Tan says, hey, I've looked at your patch. Not even friendly. He's like, looking at the patch. This is the variable format that we use, so this is wrong. Change the return type of this to whatever. Update these things. It's critiques on stuff, and it's purely cosmetic.
Right.
But there's no familiarity at all. It's just like straight up very, very clinical and professional. I don't know this guy, you know?
Yeah.
So Collins is like, I don't know about this. Like, how important was it? Like, what was the speed up? And here they got tricky because they said, on my box, it's about 4%, which is Like, that's the thing where it's like, it's not a 1% optimization where it's not worth it. And it's not 20% where it's like, I got to see that for myself.
Yeah.
Like, wow, yep. That's, you know.
And that, so on my box, gives you a bit of wiggle room as well.
Exactly. Yeah. So like, when it doesn't do anything, it's like, well, maybe it's, right? And he adds a bunch of caveats. He's like, but I'm using an older machine, so maybe, you know, I don't know.
It's smart in the sense of also having someone address, there's a whole list of problems that you've addressed because Tan has said, here are all the problems. And it leaves the main problem, you know, well, what's the point? It's needlessly complicated.
Right, it's just, yeah. Right.
But it makes exactly. It feel like, oh, these problems have been addressed. Like it's a,
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, well, we had issues and we've addressed those issues.
Yeah.
You know, because there's been all this interaction. It's not like it's not one big dump that gets moved in. It's like
trying to mire him in the details and make Colin forget about the big picture of what the sort of fundamental problem was. So, I mean, the more we talk about it, the harder it gets for me to see how you could protect against this, right? So in this particular case, Tan did some work on a different compression project. And he also did something on some sort of open source fuzzer, a Google open source fuzzer, which...
Right. Basically, that was actually legitimate developer work, because when they added this iFunk, this hook, this added complexity, it started breaking other projects, right? Because it's a weird extension supported only by GCC. And so a bunch of other stuff started breaking. And so he goes out and he starts adding patches to make sure it still works. Right?
Right.
And so people are like, this is nefarious. It's like, no. I mean, yes, he is trying to make sure that the hook that they've added stays in and keeps going. But it's legitimate developer work to make sure that that feature still works. Because there are programs that do legitimately use that feature. Like, they're rare, but they do exist. So it does make sense to do that. I mean, I think the core thing is that they did a huge amount of legitimate work. Like, people need to understand that Tan, the majority of the work that he did was completely kosher and above board.
Yeah. So he legitimately bought his way into the project through good behavior.
Yes. And... Yep. You got to wonder exactly how much of our open source infrastructure has been funded by governments just trying to get people into projects, adding new features and test suites. And
well, you know, I can mount a perfect argument that, in fact, if the open source community was riddled with intelligence agencies mostly doing good work, the vast majority of humanity benefits. It's just
I have no problems with that.
There's just the occasional case where, you know, some country's national security is damaged. You know, looking at it from humanity's point of view, go for it.
Yeah.
So are you surprised that this has happened?
No. I think the surprising thing out of all of this was how rapidly we caught it, because that was just luck.
Mm.
But I don't think catching it was luck.
Yeah. So I was wondering about this myself. Like, it seems like it's extremely early. So the backdoored patch hadn't been pushed out to mainstream distributions. So the impact at the time it was caught was very limited.
Right.
And so if it had happened...
Kali Linux, by the way, was actually impacted because they were a rolling release. But
it hadn't been pushed out to Red Hat or Debian or whatever. I think it maybe was in beta releases or something like that.
It was only for Debian. So it was in the Debian unstable testing branch, which is where it was caught.
Right. And the background is that this bloke called, I think it's Andres Freund. So Patrick and Adam spoke to Andres on the main Risky Business podcast, interviewed him about how he discovered it. But he was... trying to do some benchmarking on his own box and noticed some inconsistent behavior. So it's
right. He noticed inconsistent behavior. He remembered that he had upgraded some stuff earlier, and he thought maybe the upgrade, which was this new package of XZ, caused some issues. I better look into that. I mean, catching it at that point was luck, but if it had been pushed out, then how many different Andres would have been interacting, right? Like, if it did make it into regular releases, it would have been pushed out quite widely, and the more people who have to interact with it, the higher the chance that another nerd trying to do benchmarking or
else. Yeah, that's kind of what I think, that the internet's just full of nerds. And the you know, the wider it goes, the more nerds it's exposed to. And but that time delay was a fault in the back door, right? If they'd done it correctly, that symptom wouldn't have been there.
Yeah, I think they were too clever by half, right? There's cover, concealment, and compartmentation. So cover is an ostensibly legitimate reason for doing something. Concealment is hiding the thing, and then compartmentation is limiting where it goes. So the compartmentation they had was that Tan and these other personas only did this project, right? They're nowhere else.
Yep.
The back door, right, because they actually had such good cover in how they were able to get it in and get it working, they were the maintainer of the project, right? They were signing the tarballs. They'd snuck it in under the maintainer's nose via this very convoluted, you know, we're adding this patch and then this piece of scaffolding, and then we're adding this, you know, from a bunch of like test files, we assemble a thing and like all of this stuff. So from all of that, no one was going to look for this thing. Like their cover was so good that the actual backdoor itself could have been not particularly advanced and it would have been fine because no one was looking for it. In fact, it would have been better because it would have been faster. But I think they added a whole bunch of really clever, like, decryption. Just the way that it was doing stuff internally was very, very complicated. And I think that that added execution time. Like, it made it very hard to reverse engineer. But if people are reverse engineering it, it's game over already. Again, it feels a bit Russian to me in that they had a thing that they needed to do. And then someone was like, after getting my PhD in math from Moscow University, I've got this brilliant idea. Right. I'm going to create a state machine that creates strings based on initial seeds that you give it. And people are like, well, I mean, you can't really do anything about Alexei. He's got this weird thing about state machines. You're just going to, you know, you could write it yourself. You could accept his idea, you know. And so, like, it gets in, and it's the wrong thing for what they're doing. Like, it's super clever, and it's super cool, but it's the wrong approach, because what they really needed to do was maintain cover. Like, they didn't need the concealment to be particularly good. They just needed the cover to be good.
When you think about this particular example, I think a state can always make its way into a position of trust in an open source organization given enough time, right? And so whether they can actually implement a backdoor after that, I mean, who knows?
If they can exploit it, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think gaining access in this case is probably the easy part. It's sort of inevitable. If someone is willing to spend 3 years of just, you know, hanging out and, like, you know, doing good work and all this stuff, they're going to be able to do stuff.
It's just, well, I think the comparison is between someone who's doing it for love in their spare time versus someone who's actually being paid. I think the person who's being paid can devote more time and effort, and over time will win their trust.
Yeah. I mean, their job is not just the doing it for money. It's the being friendly and integrated. Mm. And they have a mission, and they've been trained for that, and they believe in it. And they're patriotic, and they're doing the right thing for their country.
Mm.
Like, there's a lot of compelling stuff there that makes it super hard for any project. These are agencies that go after, like, underground organizations that have super strong security and lots of vetting, and they still get access, right?
That's right.
You know, if they can get people into ISIS, I don't think XZ has got a chance.
<That's right.
laughs>
Thanks a lot, Gra.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Tom.